Wait, can I ask you a question really quick? Did you see the Manosphere thing with Louis Theroux, the new one?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, what did you think about it?
Let's put this behind the paywall because it's a little bit too in the weeds for, most people. But I am kind of curious to discuss it. And I talked about it with some of the podcasters who have been broadly lumped into that sphere, I think incorrectly, like just podcasts that guys like, more or less, not like political stuff. I thought that Louis' targets were fair. I think that pretty much everyone in the show is a bad actor. Myron Gaines, I think, is the guy. Like, these people are, they fucking suck. I have, like, no sympathy for whatever. When it comes to the, like, Rogans and the Lex Friedmans and those types that have been kind of, like, put into Manosphere content, I think that's incorrect. I think that is more so in the, like, Zinternet analysis of Max Reed. Because it's just popular with, like, normal people.
Right.
And they have majority male audiences, but they're not, they are qualitatively very different from like the Andrew Tates of the world. And I think that mainstream media, legacy journalists basically see these organizations or podcasts as their competition. And so they attempt to smear mainstream stuff with the most fringe radical elements and say, oh, look, there's a pipeline. There's a pipeline between these two things. It's like, yeah, the audience is like 100 million people. Of course, small fraction of them are also going to be interested in this other thing that's really bad. But it's a terrible posture to take to say, like, these very popular podcasts are, they're all bad. There's, the whole audience, like, must be written off. They're in that fascist percentage of society. So I thought that Louis, I don't know him. I haven't talked with him about the documentary. But I thought, you know, I went into it being like, this is going to be rough. And I thought, he's actually taking very fair shots. I had no complaints with it. Did you have... What was your interpretation
My biggest complaint is not digging into why all of them are anti-Semitic and why they constantly construct the paradigm of Jews are doing this and to just paper over that and be like, this is just the kooky, like internet stuff where they're all anti-Semites like misogynists. And it's like, well, hold on. Like, because I have, you know, I think doing a disservice to really deconstructing these belief systems and understanding why they are attractive. Because it makes it seem like there's a hidden truth.
Yeah. Do you believe, though, that like Sneeko, for example, does he have any core belief in anything? Or is he just, whatever gets the most clicks, that's my belief system today?
I think he believes what he says. I think a lot of these people do. It's really hard to really prove that someone is like a sheer grifter for the sake of like literally just pivoting their positions to get clicks. I think all of these people are very hardcore believers.
Well, that one guy, the fitness guy Spain, like he was clearly like, I hate OnlyFans, I hate porn, but I'll promote these people. Like that was very cut and dry. But then for the Sneekos, it's like, he's getting a lot of clicks, but then he also brought on, friend of the show, Alexander Dugan and Professor Jang. And so he is kind of building a platform
for
a far-right philosophical worldview.
Yeah, it's fascinating, right?
Yeah, we can't just say it's like, oh, he's memeing.
No. And that's why I think it's dangerous to not explore what that quote-unquote worldview is that he's trying to dissect, which is absolutely cartoonish. But it is rooted in something that people are outraged about, which is this horrific genocide that we're all watching that the media is lying about. So again, when you go back to why did Trump win? We know innately that we are lied to, that we're being gaslit. We have a deep distrust in institutional legacy media that lied to us about 9/11, the Iraq War, all of these things. So that's where Bannon and Trump really siphoned all that energy into like fake news and calling these things for what they are. But then again, folding everyone into these right-wing periphery and the right-wing figures in media. Yeah, yeah. But that's where I think Louis Theroux really lost the plot, is like we're not digging into why these things flourish, why they're generated in the first place, when you just completely ignore the fact that the media is lying about Israel and not digging into why that happens, because it's maintaining this power structure where Israel's an appendage of the U.S., right? Yeah, and it's all activated in the same way. That's really problematic. And it continues to make people think that there's a secret forbidden knowledge that they're being tuned into. And that's why they...
So in this idea of like pre-selecting media, this is 1,000% going behind the paywall. If Louis Theroux held the political analysis that what is required to prevent anti-establishment sentiment flowing into right-wing populism, that the kind of missing necessary ingredient is a rigorously disciplined Leninist vanguard. You'd probably not be allowed on the BBC. So there may be, he's kind of given those permissions to touch these topics mm-hmm. because he might not take the political analysis as far as you or I might.
Yeah.
Does that sound I think it's
fair, but it also folds people back into these modes of thought that mm-hmm. ultimately does a disservice and continues to silo these people off and make it more attractive. Mm-hmm. That's what I was worried about. If I were someone who was, you know, like you talk about like the undecided voters. That's fucking crazy to me whenever like an election yeah. comes up and it's like the day before the election, people are like, I don't know. Like, I haven't decided yet. And it's like, what the
coin.
Fuck? Like, like, who are these people?
I like them both. I just like them both so much.
I like them both. They both speak to me. Who would I have a beer with? But the sneak, like I was watching the Louis Theroux thing and I just thought like, I don't know if I would be convinced that of this. If I were just like a young guy watching this, I just don't know. And that's what worries me. There wasn't enough explained about, and you're right, obviously he's not going to go into media literacy mm-hmm. and how you can mm-hmm. like holistically understand why the media acts in a certain way. But when we don't do those things, and again, all of these people, there is a current that goes through all of them, anti-Semitism and misogyny. It's we're not really unpacking mm-hmm. why. Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think this is maybe too far of a rabbit hole to chase, but the Dugin position, as fucking wacky and cobbled together mm-hmm. as that shit is, but anti-liberalism being pre-modernism, anti-modernism, and post-modernism all combined kind of gives you this like zigzag. You can throw in anything that you want. And Sneeko... Clearly, some of these content creators really embody that like trifecta of anti-liberal mm-hmm. Politics.
It makes me uncomfortable because I was the victim of deplatforming 10 years ago. My show Breaking the Set on Russia Today mm-hmm. was memory hold once RT got banned in the States and
2012 to 15.
2012 to 15, 600 episodes deleted. And kind of like a modern equivalent to book burning. So it was really crazy to see, you know, my own work get lumped into this notion that it was trying to protect us.
Yeah.
Right. And I find that really infantilizing. Like, as someone who's really critical of US foreign policy and who talks about these issues a lot, I find it imperative that we hear what Putin is saying, what Assad is saying, what Xi Jinping is saying.
I agree.
I had never seen an interview with them like that. Mm-hmm. And then they just ban all media from us. We can't even hear mm-hmm. from these world leaders that are deemed enemies. So that's really cartoonish and absurd and infantilizing. And I think it goes back to Hillary Clinton basket of deplorables thing. You're making these viewpoints unsavory and somehow forbidden and more attractive to people who already have deep distrust in these institutions.
Now they're punk rock. Yeah.
And now Christianity is the new... punk rock.
Yeah. No, I'm steeply on the rise for young men, actually. I just saw some stats the other day. So let's explore this for a little bit here.
Conservatism is the new counterculture. I find that so fascinating because it's really not. Mm. This is the weird idea with this, the Bannon and Trump and MAGA thing to position liberal hegemony, right? Because... Yeah. Queer people are like in positions of power, they think that liberalism is like the doctrine and mantra of the way that we garner society. And it's just really bizarre because it's just so obviously conservative. Mm. That's every institution is run by conservatives. It's all conservative thought. It's just that we see gay people like in entertainment. And it's just bizarre. That's why there's so much attention on college campuses, because it's like the last bastion of like even discussing these things. So this weird false notion of liberal hegemony, and this is perpetrated by people like Glenn Greenwald, that liberal media controls everything, when really, this is a myth. This is a myth. Conservatives control the media spectrum. And even like the most popular podcasters, the most popular, all these people online, even in our field, are still conservatives. The most popular radio people, I mean, all of AM radio, all of TV, it's like, it's just really fascinating how little perspectives are outside of the confines of conservative thought.
Okay, let's explore this a little bit.
Okay.
So I agree. Alt media, 90% conservative. Media Matters study, I've referenced this like a dozen episodes now. 90% conservative on alt media. However, in legacy media, affiliation with the Democratic Party, I'm going to forget the exact statistics from a few years ago, but notable newsrooms, you have something like a similar 90% affiliation with the Democratic Party versus Republicans. So in one sense, alt media...
When you say legacy media, what are you talking about?
Places like cable news or newspapers or things that did not start as a digital-first YouTube channel, for example. Mm. This would be New York Times, Washington Post. Things where there is an editor between the journalist and what this paper puts out, where the alt media landscape is primarily individual driven, that is, you know, more editorial, no gatekeeper kind of thing. There are blurry distinctions now with like the Daily Wire, for example, but we can draw, I think, a very rough distinction between MSNBC and like individual conservative commentator who does a live stream without naming any particular names. In those newsrooms, it is overwhelmingly aligned with the Democratic Party. And so I'm just going to try and run through all of these incredibly uncomfortable topics here, but I think we need to take the college campus thing seriously, because the cost of higher education has become astronomical, unprecedentedly astronomical. And so you're dealing with an increasingly uneven society where you have these very economically privileged elites who are given an ideological worldview about what topics matter and are most politically urgent. And those topics don't have to deal with class because these kids are fucking rich. And then the problem is you drop it into Section 230 social media, where everything we hear is about trans kids. Everything we hear is about queer kids. None of it is about class. And of course, what is going to happen to audiences is they're going to think that the right-wing populace are the opposition. Like, these are profoundly uncomfortable topics, but if you line all of those things up, that's how you get today's media ecosystem.
No, I totally agree.
And so the task for us is to like, how can we disentangle these issues about like, you know, the liberty that you have for your individual identity and civil rights and so on, if they have for now like 10, 15 years become so inextricably entangled that most of the Democratic population, like most voting people in America, see these issues and they think that this signals to them the Democrats are not serious about the economy. And that's why the working class votes for Trump. And basically our inability to, you know, do a little bit of self-criticism about this stuff. Like, we don't need to carry water for the Sarah Lawrence college kids. Mm-hmm. You know, they're paying $65,000 a semester. Like, this is not a representative of the workers' movement. This is not a representative of the left. And I think so, yeah, it sounds a little bit silly, but the college campus politics, if you told that to TPUSA, for example, like, that's where they recruit. That's where they get all of these young right-wing people who are now this, like, kind of nationalist, emergent youth conservative wing within their institutions. And you get the White House posting, like, shit that was, like, Hyperborea memes from, like, five years ago. Mm-hmm. It has been pretty powerful in terms of intellectual production. So, after that whole kind of mess of I am now canceled a dozen ways over, what do you want to do about campus politics? How do you feel about the divisions between alt and legacy media?
I mean, I totally think you're right. I think this is why we're in the situation that we're in, because legacy media has failed and they represent, which is supposed to be the opposition to this conservative mode of thought that's been dominant strain forever. And so when you had these openings of liberal, like, modes of thought about individual liberty and free speech and... No, I mean, not even that. I mean, individual rights and representation, let's say. So when you saw queer people and marginalized people historically of other races and things like that elevated to representation, it was really great, right? But unfortunately, because of capital accumulation, because of not real representation and changing society, it was just a hollowed out tokenizing thing that was just co-opting people's real struggles. Mm-hmm. And so of course it's going to have a backlash. Of course people are going to become reactionaries seeing what the Democratic Party has done. I think this is the biggest problem right now with the Democratic Party, is they represent nothing except capital accumulation with the veneer of, you know, representation and identity politics. And it's so hollowed out and it's so hypocritical. In the wake of the Gaza genocide, we know through the post-mortem that that was the death knell for Kamala. But they're never going to rectify it. They're never going to look in the mirror and say, we need to change. Because it's all about self-preservation. It's about maintaining.
Hi, everybody. This is Joshua Citarella. What you just heard is an excerpt from this week's bonus episode. If you want to hear more and get access to the full catalog for Doomscroll and other podcasts, you can support the show on Patreon or Substack, where I'm putting out new episodes every week. This is an independent show. I don't do any advertising, so your support is really what keeps this project going. Thanks for listening. See you again soon.